This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new film, The Disaster Artist, but also some older films that are coming back and cycling through theaters around the country, including Last Flag Flying and Marshall. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, an interview with Alonzo Duraldi, author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Wind River. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Another one bites the dust when it comes to the sexual misconduct allegations. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about this. I think what I've said has been said. You can go back and listen to previous shows. I'm going to make my points again really quickly. You know, Matt Lauer, I'd heard rumors about this stuff for years. And you know, this is the way, actually, this is a little piece of new insight. If you really want to find out who's next on the chopping block for something like this, you got to listen to old episodes of Howard Stern. I remember listening to an episode of Howard Stern back in the 90s when he had Matt Lauer on, and usually he gets his guests to talk about sex and inappropriate stuff. And there's a lot of discomfort and sort of squirming in the chairs that you hear. And that's how you can usually tell the people are at least having, you know, a filter. Matt Lauer was on, and it was like the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape with Donald Trump. He just leaned into this. He sounded like a frat boy talking about the sort of misogynistic behavior. And that was in the 90s before he really kind of got his part on the Today Show or hosting the Thanksgiving Day Parade. So, I mean, I knew that this was coming. I'd heard rumors about it. And also, when I watched the parade on Thanksgiving with my family, I said, yeah, he's going to be next. And he was. The one that blows my mind is Garrison Keillor, because even when you read the story about Garrison Keillor, you're like, well, this could be completely innocent. Yeah, could it have been him being lecherous? Maybe. But it could have been innocent if you listen to his side of the story. And they don't even talk about it in detail, at least in the reports that I was reading. It's all kind of very sketchy and only gives little bits and pieces. It just doesn't seem that there's a whole lot to it. And of all things, this one is an example of one that could have been taken the wrong way. It goes back to the same thing. Punish the bad behavior. You've got insidious, weird James Bond stuff like Matt Lauer locking the door of his office while people were in there, you know, from his desk. That's strange and creepy and weird. And he apparently had been doing it for a while. Let's punish that. But we also have to keep things relevant. There's a huge difference between that and accidentally touching somebody on the back like Garrison Keillor. I still don't even know what the big deal is on that one. Comparing groping to rape is I think, a huge leap. But also, not all men do this. You got to remember it. And I think it's actually a small proportion of men that are actually doing this. And I think that there's also some accusers. You can't always believe every single accuser. I think that it's folly to believe every accuser, just as it's folly to believe every denial. You can believe different ones. You can think that an accuser or a group of accusers are not coming at it from an honest perspective. They may be misunderstanding. They may have selective memory, or they may just be out for revenge. And then you can also believe when accusers are, you can believe that they're absolutely right. I think a lot of it has to do with the reporting and how the things come out. If it's a single case that's been thrown out there on Twitter, I don't think that holds as much water as something that's been like vetted and researched by journalistic forces. So same thing's going on. We're seeing people dropping off the map because of this, and some of them deserve it. I don't know if all of them do. Now, the next piece of news I want to hit, just real quickly, this week we had the first wave of award season hit with the National Board of Review picking their best movies and the New York Film Critics Circle giving out their awards as well. There's a couple ones that, I mean, there's the stuff to note that Call Me By Your Name is getting a lot of buzz. I have a lot to say about that movie, and I talked about it very briefly when I talked about I Love You, Daddy, because I find it disingenuous to praise this movie and not others and to condemn others, just because I think that there's a certain amount of connective tissue that's similar. There's also a lot of buzz for Greta Gerwig. Her movie, Lady Bird, is doing extremely well, doing very well in the critics. I think it's odd that Lady Bird won Best Picture for the New York Film Critics Circle, but she didn't win Best Director, nor did she win Best First Film, which is kind of odd because it was her first film. I mean, not her first film she was ever in, but Jordan Peele had been in movies many times before. That Get Out, which won Best First Film, was the first time he directed. So I find it a little bit disingenuous giving some of these awards that don't even make sense, because, I mean, if it's the best film of all year, it should be the best in everything else, and she should have won Best Director, and she should have won Best First Film, but she didn't. And that's not even me defending Lady Bird. I like Lady Bird. I don't think it's the best of the year, though. The one that I do think was really interesting is Tiffany Haddish won for Best Supporting Actress for Girls Trip, which nobody expected whatsoever. And I mean, she was funny in Girls Trip. I don't think she was necessarily the strongest part. And while I think she was very funny and I thought she worked in the character, I never at any point when I watched that movie considered that an award performance. But, you know, supporting actors tend to go for comedy, creepy, weird, off-kilter roles more than the full-blown actor. So it's going to be an interesting award season. We haven't gotten that forerunner yet, especially when you had the National Board of Review and the New York Film Critics Circles on the top awards, actors and directors and pictures split on everything. There's no commonality there. So we'll see what happens in the coming months. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit, of course, is All the Money in the World. This is not the first trailer. It's the second trailer, but there's a huge difference in this one in the sense that Kevin Spacey's not in it. So this one opens on December 22nd, just in a couple weeks.
$17 million. All they will take is eye, is ear, the hand, and don't tell me you don't have the money.
My former father-in-law only buys the best. It's time for you to do whatever it is he pays you to do. I hope you're half as good as everything else he's bought.
We need to pay the ransom, Mr. Getty.
I do not have the money to spare.
I hired you to do things that other people can't or won't do.
That's right. They finally got the reshoots done. They've put Christopher Plummer in with Kevin Spacey. Actually, he's featured more in this trailer than Kevin Spacey was in the first one. I remember when that first one dropped. I actually saw the Kevin Spacey trailer in the theaters, and in just the trailer parts, I'm like, well, Christopher Plummer's a more appropriate role. He's old anyways. And Kevin Spacey just seemed like the guy dressed as the old man playing an old man, whereas Christopher Plummer is an old man. This one looks good. A lot of people are kind of like stunned that they were able to get this done and all ready to go. But I've been betting that there's not a whole lot of screen time devoted to this character. There was probably a more relatively easy edit. And he wasn't like flying him to all these different locations. I think most of it takes place in the mansions and on the grounds. The next one I have to talk about, of course, is Avengers Infinity War, which opens on May 4th.
In time, you will know what it's like to lose. To feel so desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man a shield.
This is obviously going to be the biggest Avengers movie. They've got everybody involved in this. They show up, everybody in this one. I actually have more faith in this one than Avengers Age of Ultron, because Age of Ultron had so many characters, it was collapsing under its own weight. And while this one has a lot of characters, I think they all are kind of aligned for a similar purpose, so you can use them all appropriately. Similar to how Captain America Civil War had a ton of the Avengers, not all of them, but a ton of the Avengers in it, but actually fit and worked like a solid story, much more than Avengers Age of Ultron, which just felt bloated and trying to service everybody because not everybody. It felt like a sequel, you know, whereas Infinity War looks like this actually is like the first Avengers, where they're bringing everybody together and everybody has a certain thing to do. I mean, that's a lot to get from this short little trailer that doesn't show you a whole lot, but I have to cover this now because my MO is to not cover anything leading up to it. So I'm not going to watch anything else for Avengers between now and May because I don't want everything spoiled, which they tend to do even in studio's own trailers. So I'm looking forward to that one next summer. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Last Flag Flying and Marshall here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some movie reviews. These are films that have actually been in theaters for a couple weeks. And you get this, actually, you get this sort of thing throughout the year, really, because there are limited releases that come out, and that's just a marketing style. I mean, of course, for big movies like Star Wars or the Marvel films, they drop those in all theaters, sometimes all across the planet at the same time, because they know that everybody's going to want to see it at the same time. You tend to get smaller movies that are either more independent or they're a little bit more of a risk, or they're just handled by a smaller studio that can't afford to distribute a movie to 10,000 screens. So it's not uncommon to get independent or smaller releases done in a limited platform release. But you see that throughout the years. You certainly see that during award season, because you have a thing called qualifying runs where they will drop a movie into like two theaters, like just New York, or maybe one in New York and one in LA. And actually you're seeing that this week with The Shape of Water. That's in just one. I'm not talking about this week because most people are going to listen to the show can't go out and see the movie. So why bother talking about that one? Otherwise, then I'm just bragging about seeing a movie a couple weeks earlier. Same thing with Darkest Hour. That's out in limited release. It doesn't go wide until the 22nd. The Post isn't even out yet. Wins the National Board of Review, and it comes out limited for its qualifying release in December. People in flyover country aren't going to see that movie until January sometime. So sometimes these movies fall under my radar. I'm going to be talking about Wind River a little bit later in the show for the Blu-ray spotlight, but it rolled out slowly, and by the time it got into enough theaters, it had left enough theaters to not really cover on the show, and sometimes things fall through the cracks. So this one that I want to talk about, the first one, is Last Flag Flying. It actually opened at the beginning of November, and it's slowly gotten wider, and it's by Amazon Studios, so they have the infrastructure to do wide releases, and it's big names to it. So I don't know why it hasn't gotten a bigger release, but it's sort of struggling out there, but I think it's worth talking about. It's opening in my hometown this week. And in Last Flag Flying, two Vietnam vets travel to Virginia with another ex-Marine buddy to retrieve the body of his son, who was killed in combat in Afghanistan.
Because of my son, I came here, found you guys. A year ago, we joined the Corps, and then 2 days ago, they told me that he'd been killed. Can be buried in Arlington, and I was wondering if you guys could come with me.
I've come to you in search of some.
They sent him off to a godforsaken desert. Why? I'm taking Larry home.
With all due respect, sir, he deserves to lie at Arlington.
You're gonna take Doc back and try to make it fun.
They're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Did you look at these faces? They've already been spited.
This is directed by Richard Linklater, who he did movies like Boyhood. He got a lot of praise for Boyhood, and I personally didn't particularly like it. And I really blow hot and cold with Linklater stuff. Like, I've never been a big fan of Slacker, which was his very first independent film. I kind of loathed, in my own way, Dazed and Confused for its reveling in inappropriate behavior that was appropriate at that time. I also am not a big fan of some of his middling stuff, but other ones I've seen, like Bernie, that one with Jack Black as the funeral director, I thought that was actually quite clever. And even last year, Everybody Wants Some, I enjoyed. I thought that was a good movie. This is him going a little more serious, and you know, obviously he's dealing with some very heavy subjects here. The key to this movie, there are two keys. First of all, it's the cast. Steve Carell plays the vet whose son has been killed in combat. And Bryan Cranston plays the first one he comes and finds. And then they find the other played by Lawrence Fishburne. And they're all very, they've all taken very different paths since their time in the service and their time in Vietnam. And of course, it takes place 14 years ago, 2003. So Vietnam wasn't as far away in the rearview mirror as it is now, but it still was pretty far. I mean, you're talking 25 years since the real heavy ending of Vietnam that happened before this film. It's great actors working with a good script, and each one playing their own role, but also making it their own. And Bryan Cranston kind of plays a little closer to type. We've seen him as the more obnoxious character before, but Steve Carell, he's very soft-spoken, he's very quiet, he's not the typical Steve Carell character, and Lawrence Fishburne is directly playing against type. He's playing a pastor. His character when he was younger is much more like the Lawrence Fishburne we know from the films, but he's, of course, suppressed a lot of that heavier stuff, you know, as he's gotten older. But you've got great actors delivering very good dialogue. And the other reason this movie works is within these performances, they're not trying to deconstruct the politics of the day. They're not trying to talk about why they were there. I mean, you get the perspective of the vet. You get the perspective of the people who served. And they didn't care necessarily what was going on politically. They were there for each other. And you also get that reflected in the younger people they're running into who are serving in Afghanistan, and a very apolitical sense. Not to say that vets don't get political, not to say that you can't get political in something like this, but that's not what this movie's about. This movie is about healing personally and supporting your brothers, but it's also about just being human through the experience rather than trying to sit up in an ivory tower and shake your finger at people in the past for their sins. And that's, I thought, was so compelling about this movie. So I'm going to have to say Last Flag Flying totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Next film I want to talk about really quickly is Marshall. As a young lawyer in the NAACP, Thurgood Marshall travels to Connecticut to defend a black man accused of raping a white woman.
Joseph Spell, Negro servant, attacks socialite in her own bedroom.
This case will show the world if a colored man can get a fair trial in the United States.
There's only 13 million Negroes depending on you.
I only represent innocent people, people accused because of their race. That's my mission.
I never touched that woman.
I need a partner who the jury can relate to.
The only way to get through a bigot's door is to break it down.
This is one that came out earlier in October, and it's getting a big release, a sort of a resurgence back, like 500 theaters. It's coming back. And I think part of it, they're a bit campaigning for award season. You got Chadwick Boseman, he's pretty much, if there's a main black young guy in a movie, everything from Black Panther to Jackie Robinson is going to be played by Chadwick Boseman. But he plays Thurgood Marshall, but you also have Josh Gad playing Sam Friedman, who was the local lawyer on this that was able to get Thurgood Marshall into the courtroom, which was important because you can't exactly mount a defense without actually being in the room itself. This is an interesting look in the past, and it's not really a biopic of Thurgood Marshall because he was very much sidelined in this whole process because of the system. He could be there, but he couldn't talk because he was not local counsel. He was not part of their bar. That you see some of the institutional racism, even in a place like Connecticut, which you consider, you know, it's very easy to look down in a movie like Selma and, you know, get the hillbilly sheriff who's chewing tobacco and got his pants pulled way up because he just wants to stop the black people from voting. That's a very easy character to paint from a caricature perspective. You don't expect that in the northern states, and I think that they tackle that. This feels a bit TV movie-ish. It's kind of a courtroom drama, but it's an interesting movie, and it shows some of the parts of American history we may not be so proud of, especially today looking back and realizing that this was less than 100 years ago, less than 75 years ago. So this is a good movie. It's worth checking out if you get a chance to see it, and that is Marshall. I'm going to say that Marshall kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking with Alonzo Duraldi, the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. It is officially Christmas time. It is officially December. We got the Christmas music playing. We've got the magical studio in the sky decorated for Christmas. And in order to be part of the holiday spirit, I want to bring in a friend of mine, Alonzo Giraldi. He is a podcaster. He's a writer. He's an author. He is the films editor for The Wrap and the host of the Linoleum Knife podcast. And he has a book out called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. It's available at booksellers everywhere, especially online retailers. There's a print version, a paperback, a Kindle version. If there's anybody I know who knows Christmas and knows Christmas movies, it's Alonzo Giraldi. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How long did you write this book?
It came out in 2010. Okay. And, you know, I've been sort of, you know, a few movies have come out since then that I would have added, but I think for the most part, it's still a solid list.
This is called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And when I describe it to people, I say it's probably the most comprehensive collection of Christmas movies that have really ever been released. Did you hit every Christmas movie ever made?
Well, I mean, that was the goal. I'm sure there's going to be somebody out there saying, I believe you forgot. So, you know, I'm never going to claim to have a absolutely 100% complete list. But I'd say between the book and what's in the appendix up until, you know, my publication date, I did a pretty thorough job of trying to cover everything. And I did cast a wide net, too. So, you know, as far as my book is concerned, Eyes Wide Shut and The Lion in Winter are as much a Christmas movie as Elf and Die Hard.
Oh, so yes, you're falling into that Die Hard, Lethal Weapon. Those are all considered Christmas movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think Shane Black obviously has a real Jones for Christmas. If you look at, you know, going from Lethal Weapon to The Long Kiss Goodnight to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and even Iron Man 3 and A Touch of the Nice Guys. Like, he loves to get him some twinkle lights in there.
Do you consider TV movies for Christmas in this as well, like Holiday in Handcuffs and all those Hallmark movies that my wife tends to tape and watch over the holidays?
When I wrote the book, I didn't. I did include a few made-for-TV movies that I thought were really exceptional. Like, there's a movie from the early 70s called The Homecoming, which was basically the pilot for the Waltons TV show. And a few other ones, The Gathering and A Christmas Without Snow. But for the most part, I have a whole chapter of Scrooge movies, and I was trying to include as many of the, you know, Scrooge is a Ruthless Career Woman remakes that we were getting for a while there with, you know, Susan Lucci and Tori Spelling and Cicely Tyson. But yeah, there's a whole other book, I think, to be done just about those Hallmark movies. And I used to sort of scoff at those, but the world has taken us to a place now where, you know, they're cheaper than Zoloft. And so if I need something to feel less tense at the end of the day, I will slap on, you know, Hallmark or Hallmark Movies and Mysteries and watch, you know, Lacey Chabert learn how to make cookies and land the man of her dreams.
Now, when you categorize these, do you rate them? How do you conceptualize them if somebody wants to get the book and say, hey, I want to choose my Christmas movies to watch this year?
Well, the ones that I wrote about and that I sort of go in detail about, that's sort of my, you can pretty much assume that I'm recommending them. Except there is one chapter that's about really bad Christmas movies. And so that's you sort of your call if you want to go there. But I mean, I at least even in those tried to pick ones that were sort of exceptionally, brilliantly terrible. So again, I have an appendix where I list a lot of films, and some of them because maybe they just have Christmas in one or two scenes, and some of them because they're just not ones that I liked enough to want to do the research and watch multiple times and, you know, really dig into. So pretty much if it's featured in the main part of the book, you can take that as an endorsement.
How many do you cover in the entire book?
Over 100. It's over a variety of categories. Movies for kids, movies definitely not for kids, action movies, horror movies, tearjerkers, you know, like I said, an entire chapter of a Christmas Carol adaptations, you know, the classics, you know, because I think there's whatever you're in the mood for, there is a Christmas movie that will work for it.
Why did you choose Christmas and Christmas movies? I know you're a movie guy.
Yeah.
But why did you use Christmas as a theme?
Well, I mean, I'm a movie guy, but I'm also a Christmas guy. I have really sort of had a lifelong love of the holiday. You know, I think that the candles and hand soap smell better this time of year than any other one. There were two things that I was very interested in. And certainly over the years, I, when you're a freelance writer, you get assigned a lot of listicles. And I had done my share of 8 offbeat Christmas movies or unusual Christmas movies or whatever. And I figured there was a rich enough subject there where, yes, we all think about It's a Wonderful Life and we all think about White Christmas. And then you had movies like Gremlins and things that sort of fall between categories that have a lot of Christmas in them, but people don't necessarily think of them as quote unquote Christmas movies. So it seemed like there was a lot of ground to cover, a lot of movies that certainly I discovered a lot of films in writing this that I had never seen before. And so I was hoping to allow people to expand their annual repertoire, you know. And it's like, I grew up in a household where we had 5 Christmas albums: Andy Williams, Bing Crosby, Dean Martin, the Boston Pops, and Perry Como, I think. And so then as an adult, to sort of have iTunes at my disposal and find out, oh, like, you know, Pearl Bailey and Ella Fitzgerald and all these other kind of cool things that were new to me, I would like to bring that for movies to people. So if every year it's about Miracle on 34th Street and White Christmas, which are great, don't get me wrong, I love those movies, and I totally get the idea of traditions, you know, you might look through this book and go, oh, okay, I've never heard of All Mine to Give or Remember the Night or I'll Be Seeing You, and maybe I'll give that a shot this year.
Do you ever get sick of Christmas?
It hasn't happened yet. Oh, wow. Knock wood. Another guy who is like itching to turn over his iTunes to all Christmas music pretty much the second that Halloween is over. I get some people have a limited tolerance for this kind of thing, but as of now, I'm still pretty much, you know, all in.
This book came out, you said, in 2010.
Right.
Which, first of all, tell everybody where they can get it.
Oh, well, it's on Amazon as both a print edition and a Kindle, and various booksellers online. You can probably find it pretty easily.
Have yourself a movie Little Christmas.
Correct.
Alonzo Duraldi. Since it's been 7 years, almost 8 years since the first edition came out, are you wanting to do even if it was just an online or a Kindle version of an update? Are you going to do a 10th anniversary edition coming up? Are you preparing for something?
I would certainly be down for it. You know, it's the kind of thing where the I love that you call it a first edition, by the way. Let's keep that candle burning. you know, obviously this one's got to sell to an extent that it makes people want to dig in further. But yeah, I mean, I think every year we get, a handful of Christmas movies, and there have been some along the way that I would totally add. You know, Arthur Christmas came out after my book came out, which I like a lot. This year we had a really cool little, very smart and very chilling horror movie called Better Watch Out that I like very much, that, if you're a fan of Christmas horror movies, I think would absolutely go in there. It's currently streaming. It's coming out on Blu-ray, I think, the first week in December.
Do you want to put stuff on a website, especially since so many have come out since?
If the opportunity arises, if my publisher shows interest, certainly. But here it is, it's 7 years later and I'm still hawking this book because I think, normally you write a book and you dig in it for about 6 to 8 months and you really, shop it around and you make personal appearances and you do all that stuff. You write a Christmas book and you've only got about a 4-week window every year to talk about it. So even though it's 7 years later, I'm only about 6 or 7 months into the process, really, of promoting the book.
Yeah, I would imagine this doesn't sell terribly well in July.
Not that I know of. I don't know that it flies off the shelves then. But, according to my Amazon statistics, I sell an astonishing number of copies every day on Christmas Day. So,
wow. Well, see, that's good. If you're interested at all about figuring out some brand new movies or older movies, new movies to you, that you have not seen and you want to put those on your Christmas watching list, go check out Alonzo Duraldi's Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Get it on Amazon, iTunes. You can also hear Alonzo on the Linoleum Knife podcast. He's also the film reviews editor of The Wrap. Anything else you want to plug, Alonzo, so people know where to find you?
Oh, yeah. I'm seemingly everywhere these days. No, I'm one of the hosts of What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And I'm also co-hosting a new show that started at the Maximum Fun Network called Who Shot Ya, where I talk about new movies every week with comedian Ricky Carmona and LA Weekly film critic April Wolf.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
And there you have it, Alonzo Duraldi. If you have anyone else left on the Christmas list that you need to buy for, this is a great book. If you've got a little bit left on a gift card, you want to check it out and restart your own list of Christmas movies, you can check out Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Disaster Artist, the weekly box office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Wind River. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap up things with the movie review, the final review of the week. And this is a film, it's like some of these other ones, it's in limited release, but it's getting a lot of buzz. And it's not just a qualifying release, it's in only like 6 or 10 theaters, but it's going to be expanding next week. But I wanted to cover it because there's so many films coming out over the next couple weeks. I wanted to get this one highlighted, and that is The Disaster Artist. James Franco writes and directs this film about how Tommy Wiseau wrote, directed, and starred in the infamous bad movie, The Room.
Wish we could just make our own movie.
A great idea.
So there's this guy, Johnny, a true American hero, to be played by me. He has it all. Good luck, many friends, and also maybe Johnny is a vampire. We'll see.
This set of the alleyway looks exactly like the real alleyway.
That's right.
Well, why don't we just shoot in the real alleyway?
Because it's a real Hollywood movie.
Action!
I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
First of all, if you've not seen The Room, and there's a huge difference between Room, which won Brie Larson the Oscar a couple years ago, and The Room, which is Tommy Wiseau's disaster piece. That he released and how they made a movie. These are two totally different films. The Room was a movie that was made in the late 90s, early 2000s, where this weird guy, Tommy Wiseau, that nobody really knows where he's from or how old he is or where he got his money, but he ends up making this movie and putting himself in the starring role. And it's awful. It's an awful movie. And I've always been a big fan of bad movies, even before Mystery Science Theater. When I discovered Mystery Science Theater in my college days in the early 90s, I fell in love with it because I had an affinity for bad movies. I remember with my sister, we would sit around and we'd goof on movies all the time. We'd watch movies on, you know, late night TV. We'd get these black and white old horror films that we'd watch that they'd play late night on movies. And I remember we saw Troll 2. We had taped it off of like HBO or something because we had seen the original Troll, which this has nothing to do with. And Troll 2 is one of the most infamous bad movies out there as well. You know, you talk infamous bad movies, you're talking like Plan 9 from Outer Space, Troll 2, and The Room is way up there. And we had such fun watching Troll 2 and goofing on that. And now they've kind of had there's this novelty to them where it's kind of reached the mainstream, sometime to its detriment where people are watching really ultimately good movies like The Shining and goofing on them. But a movie like The Room deserves to be skewered. And it's not like something like Birdemic, which is just a bad movie. Birdemic is a terrible movie, and it should not be lauded as unintentional genius. And same thing like the trauma movies. You know, I have fun watching The Toxic Avenger, but they know what they're doing. That's like what they're doing with Sharknado. You can't really say Sharknado is a bad movie because it's all intending to do that. The Room is not intending to be a mess, but it is. And anyone who's ever worked on independent film knows what a mess these kind of movies can be. And so that's why when you watch a film like The Disaster Artist, if you've worked on independent film, you know what people are going through. But then Tommy was such a egoist and is so insane that anything that is that is insane and crazy that goes on an independent film is magnified 1,000 times. And this is based on Greg Sestero's book, who's the guy who plays Mark in the movie. Dave Franco plays Mark, or Greg, who plays Mark in The Room, and Tommy Wiseau is played by James Franco. Now, if you listen to the trailer and you've not seen The Room or ever heard Tommy Wiseau talk, you're going to squinch up your nose and be like, what the heck is James Franco doing? Is this real? Yes, it's absolutely real. Franco does a dead-on performance as Tommy Wiseau. And he seems like a caricature. He seems like a not real person, but he is. And it's such a remarkably terrible film. The Room is that you, it's almost hard to believe that there was a real story that had this come to fruition. This movie reminds me in a lot of ways of Ed Wood, where Ed Wood, directed by Tim Burton, is such a great deconstruction of a filmmaker's passion that is not matched by his talent. And this movie, The Disaster Artist, to me is going to go down in the annals of film as one of these great movies about making a movie, like Ed Wood, like American Movie. If you've never seen that documentary, it's fantastic, from the late 90s. These are films that are amazing to watch and jaw-dropping just in how they came to be. So The Disaster Artist is great because not only does Franco capture the essence of Tommy Wiseau, there's a certain amount of empathy and pathos you feel for him throughout the film, which is, I mean, it's a great acting performance by Franco and a directing performance. So I'm going to have to say it's one of my favorite movies of the year, actually. So I'm going to have to say The Disaster Artist totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. No big surprise. Last week, Coco won with $50 million, almost $51 million for the weekend, and then almost $73 million from Wednesday night on. But there's also Justice League. Justice League is actually doing fine. It's probably going to, by the middle of the weekend, it's going to be pushing $200 million. It's on its way to finishing somewhere between $200 and $300 million, which isn't great, but considering it's got over $300 million in foreign sales, it's almost at $500 million worldwide. This movie's doing fine in terms of box office, and like many of the films that we've seen in 2017, the international box office is going to save it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Let's talk about Wind River. A green FBI agent travels to the remote Wind River Indian Reservation to solve a murder of a young woman found barefoot and assaulted in the snow.
They have 6 officers to cover an area the size of Rhode Island. Maybe you can help.
I only know what the tracks say.
What is it that you do again?
I hunt predators.
So why don't you come hunt one for me then? Why would a teenage girl be out here? What is she running from?
You're looking for clues, but you're missing all the signs.
Shouldn't we wait for backup?
This isn't the land of backup, Jane. This is a land of you're on your own.
This is one that went under my radar. I was aware of it. I just never got around to watching it and reviewing it. It's similar to The Big Sick. That was another one that kind of made a lot of noise this summer and fall in terms of it floating around, but then I never got a chance to review it. By the time I would have gotten a chance to see it, it's sort of like I missed that window. So I wanted to highlight Wind River, especially because it's during award season. And this one I find it as a particular interest in award season because it was a Weinstein Company release, and the filmmakers, after the big blow up with Harvey Weinstein earlier this fall, the filmmakers untangled their film from the Weinstein Company and now have nothing to do with the Weinstein Company, and in some ways are promoting that in award season. They are aggressively trying to keep this movie on the radar, and they should, because this is one of the many tragedies of films from the Weinstein Company now is they're tainted forever, and the name Weinstein in front of it is going to be a movie that nobody wants to be associated with. And there's all these people who made this really fantastic film, Wind River, and it's in danger of being forgotten, and it's a casualty of Harvey Weinstein's peccadilloes. So let's talk a little bit about this movie. It's ultimately a police procedural, but It's a Taylor Sheridan movie, and he did Hell or High Water, which came out a couple years ago, I believe. And it ended up coming out in August and kind of disappearing, and then came back for some award nominations and some wins. So this one, it has the same feel. It's very heavy. It's very dour at times. It's about the depressing life on these Indian reservations, especially this one that's very, very remote, and there's nothing to do, and it's all snowy, and it's secluded, which I would love myself, but apparently it's a little bit hard on some people, and how there's a lot of depression and crimes on the reservation that don't get completely solved because you have tribal police in charge of it, because it's Indian land. It's not necessarily technically federal land. It's not state land. It's Indian land. And, it doesn't dwell on that, but it's sort of, that's the backdrop for it, where murders go unsolved a lot of times. And this is a police procedural in that backdrop. You would think it would be more racially charged because of that. It's not. They have a little digs here or there, but it's more or less the setup of the white girl from the FBI just being an outsider. But ultimately, it's a procedural. I could see this almost as a pilot for a series where you have this FBI agent fish out of water type thing. So we've seen these movies before. And you know, when they get to the resolution, it's not totally unpredictable, but it's just a very well done, solid movie. And it's definitely worth checking out. So I'm going to have to say Wind River rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other movies that are out this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Lucky Logan, The Defiant Ones, Rememory, Tulip Fever, and Woodchuck. That is it for this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Just Getting Started and I, Tonya. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.